Alrighty, what's going on, guys? David Aston from whyamiunhealthy.com. I've got a very, very special guest here today. He's a professional strongman. He's a strength and conditioning coach out of Florida. He's the owner of Strength Camp, and he's a positive role model for thousands of men and women around the world. I'm here with Elliot Hulse today. How you doing, Elliot?
Pretty good, David. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. Hey, how did it all start, man? Can you give us a brief background?
Well, my parents are from Belize, if you want to go that far back.
Sure.
So I'm a first-generation American. My parents moved to America, and they had me, and my mother's brother came to live with us, and he was a stud athlete. He essentially was a gymnast. He was a marathon runner. He turned into a bodybuilder. He would chop bricks in half with his hands and do standing backflips and all this crazy stuff right in front of me while I was probably about 3 or 4 years old, and he started teaching me and my brothers how to train when we were very young. So by the time I got into kindergarten, I was doing more push-ups and sit-ups than most kids can probably do today. And that kind of parlayed into where he began teaching me and my brothers again when we were in high school how to weight train. That allowed me to earn a college scholarship to play football. I also started training the football team because I was one of the only kids that knew how to weight train, because my uncle taught me this when we were very young. So I started training the other players on my football team with barbells in my parents' basement. That gave me a taste for becoming a coach, so I decided I was going to study exercise physiology, strength and conditioning in college to become a coach. I graduated college, was a personal trainer, opened up my own gym, started coaching athletes, began recording the workouts with my athletes with a flip cam, putting it on YouTube, then started taking questions about strength and conditioning from people on YouTube and making more videos, to the point now where I still own my gym, have athletes coming here, but I have over 1 million subscribers between my two YouTube channels and something like 100 million views of my videos.
Wow, man, that's really impressive. So, I mean, you just started putting the videos on YouTube. YouTube hasn't been around that long, so you really kind of just got into this not too long ago, huh?
When I opened my gym, I knew that the best way for me to build my clientele was through references, word of mouth. So what I would do is I'd record the workouts with the kids. A lot of these kids, you know, they were in high school and college, and I knew that their parents were paying for it. Parents like to brag about what their kids do. So I would record the kids working out. I'd make videos about how they're getting stronger and bigger with hopes that the parents would share the videos with their friends, and their friends would then ultimately bring their children in to come and train with me. I had no idea that, especially at that time, it was like 2007, YouTube just cracked open, and the only reason why I started using it again was for parents to share the videos with other parents that would ultimately bring more clients to my gym. But then, you know, the comments section started filling up with people from India and Europe and all over the world, and I quickly realized that they were gaining popularity, so I focused some more attention on serving the internet world as opposed to just my local community, and it's just snowballed in that way for the past 5 years.
That's awesome, man. Real quick, you said you're a first-generation American. Does that mean, I think I've heard in a couple of your other videos that your family was basically living as primal. Does that affect your grocery shopping and the way you eat now?
Well, it affected the way I grew up. My father, like, he didn't even have shoes when he was a kid. And they were poor, of course, because they lived in a third world country. They were happy. But even when he was introduced to shoes, he was like, what the hell is this? I really need to put this on my feet because it feels like crap. And he was much happier walking around in dirt. And his father was a pig farmer, so my grandfather raised pigs and grew their own vegetables and stuff, and that was just the way of life that they knew. They lived on the earth and from the earth. So when he came to America, he and my mother came to America, he was sick for a long time and didn't know why, but he quickly realized after a few months of not feeling well that it was because of the poor quality of food, the amount of toxins in the water and in the air. And my father is not, he's not a scientist in that way, and there wasn't the internet back then, and a lot of the ideas that we take for granted about nutrition and health weren't available back then, but you quickly realized that he had better start listening to his body, because living in this industrialized nation in what they believed was a place where the streets were paved with gold, he quickly realized is making him sick. And he carried that understanding into raising us as children, and we were fortunate enough to live in a home where only whole foods were cooked and shared with us. And my father was a big proponent of just being outside and running around and spending as little time inside on the couch as possible. So before a lot of these ideas were popular, it was just a matter of, this was the culture that my parents came from, and they sort of helped retain it when they started raising children in Long Island, New York.
That's really cool, man. Is this the same type of approach you're taking with your kids?
You know, each generation loses a bit as we gain. You know, like I said, there was no internet back then.
Right.
So I truly believe that, as Ralph Waldo Emerson says, with everything that we gain, every step in progress that we make, we lose something. So that life is never really a true progression, but a circular motion. And we've gained so much, and my children have things that I didn't have, that my dad couldn't even imagine existed. I mean, he didn't even have a telephone growing up. And to the fact that my children all have Kindles, where they're like playing games against children all over the world at the same time on this little device that they carry with them while we're driving in our car, is just unheard of. But at the same time, they have, being a part of our contemporary culture, lost a lot of the things that were associated with living freely but detached from the technology we have today. I can't allow my children, you know, I'd be doing more harm than good if I didn't allow them to experience the technology that's available to us. But at the same time, they lose what some of the things that I had and that my parents obviously had. So I do retain the same ideas, I speak the same sentiment, but it's, you know, we've got to figure out how to implement it into contemporary life. And that's really been a big part of my mission, is how to take grand ideas, resourceful ideas, philosophies, and use them practically in our contemporary world.
And is that kind of like, well, actually, first of all, that obviously sounds like becoming the strongest version of yourself, but what led to that? What led to you wanting to do that? And I've heard you mention the four pillars of strength. How does the four principles of strength tie into, you know, contemporary society and all the modern technology and the character traits that we all see?
We have to live in this world. You know, it's a saying, I think, from the Bible. I can't remember exactly where. Maybe it is or maybe it isn't. But to live in the world but be not of it.
Right.
That essentially means, can you keep your... Ralph Waldo Emerson also has another great quote that goes along the lines of, the most difficult thing for a man to do is to be himself in a world that's constantly trying to change him. And essentially means that we've got to live in this world. And it's a pretty incredible world as well. You know, the technology that allows me to speak to you over the great ocean in this particular way is phenomenal. It's magical. We live in a magical freaking time. And we've got so many awesome things. I like the luxuries that we have. My mother had to like beat her clothing on stones in order to clean them. And in my home, most of the time, like, we don't even have time to do the laundry, and we have someone come and help us with it. You know, it's crazy. So, and we have machines that do it. And we have machines that wash our dishes. And my parents had to like go and, in order to have warm water, they'd have to fetch it from the river, and then they'd have to leave it in the sun all afternoon so that it'd be warm enough for them to clean their bodies or their dishes. So it's a beautiful thing. We've gained a lot. But at the same time, we're still the same animals that we were 10,000 years ago. We still have the same nervous system. We still respond to stress the same way. We still have the same nutritional needs. So the real balance, the art of living in this day and age, and in all days and age, really, Joseph Campbell talks a lot about that. You know, that each day, the challenge of each day is to learn how to live in it, given that we're still human beings but living in a civilized nation. The art is trying to live in the world and at the same time retain your humanity and develop yourself in the best way that you possibly can, mentally, physiologically, and physically.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think, you know, we've spent a lot of time trying to make life more comfortable for ourselves. You know, like you said, we have so many amazing luxuries and technologies that can literally come in and do our laundry for us. You know, I'm talking to you from thousands of miles away right now, but I think a lot of that, people get complacent, they get used to it, they start to see challenges as negatives and not so much as opportunities to grow, and a lot of that probably has to do with the technology. How do you address that?
We've got to use discipline to create habits that force us to live like human beings once again. I think one of the easiest things, and I say this over and over again, if anybody, you know, everybody's listening to this who knows where I'm coming from, who's watched my videos, the simple act of walking is one thing, one habit that you can instill that will revolutionize your health on three layers. I often talk about layers of strength that you describe, but energetically or mentally, physiologically and neuromuscularly, your muscular system. We don't even walk. I mean, it's the most basic of human activities is putting one foot in front of the other. I mean, we grew legs for the simple fact that we needed to put food in our mouth. Now we've got microwave ovens and grocery stores and automobiles, and we do most of our work sitting down, so we don't even use the legs that grew out of our ancestors' core, that sole purpose was to mobilize the organism to find food. We don't even do. So I say, do something as simple as walking every day. Get up for an hour earlier and just walk for an hour. You'd be surprised at how it revolutionizes your mind, body, and soul.
That's a great point, man. I think I've heard you say it before, but the one responsibility that we all have and need to embrace is producing good health. You know, without owning up to this one major responsibility, we have no business taking on anything else, first and foremost. So really, how do we address and get people to acknowledge that every individual moment has a significant and potentially positive or negative impact on our life? And I mean, really, those positive and negative impacts are what's shaping our character.
Well, I think the key is to be aware. Sometimes we become, there's this saying where they say you're so close to the trees and you can't see the forest. And that will show up everywhere in our lives. And that's a part of the reason why we suffer from so much anxiety and depression and different energetic diseases, because we're so close to the tree that we can't see the bigger picture. And I think by simply meditating or spending some time to objectively reflect on who we are, you know thyself, and the choices we make, where our life is going, where it's coming from is always a good thing to know. Your own history is always important to remember. And to adjust accordingly. What happens, I use a metaphor of the tornado very often, where if life is spinning out of control, and many of us feel like our lives are spinning out of control and that we're not in control of our lives, it's almost like bad choices are being made automatically. It's like you're in a tornado being tossed around with cars and cows and trees and whatever this massive tornado has torn up out of the earth. And it's smacking us in the face. It's turning us upside down. We have no center. We have no grounding for our being. That if we continue to live our lives spinning around in that tumult, we never find any peace, and we can never really be effective in our lives. And by stepping back and taking an objective view on ourselves through whatever means you choose to allow that to happen, meditation, there are so many different forms of meditation, journaling, or just sitting quietly in solitude and thinking and reflecting on your day every day. What happens is it's like you come to the center of that tornado, which is very different than stepping outside the tornado. I'll talk about that in a moment. But if you step into the center of the tornado, you're still a part of life. You're still a part of the Maya, the illusion, the big show dance, the big dog and pony show. You're still a part of it because you're in the tornado. But from the eye of it, from the calm in the center of it, you can look at all those things that are spinning around in your life without being personally identified with it or carried away by it. And from that place, you can literally take your hand and pluck out and look at objectively the things that you would like to keep in the tornado, things that you would like to get out, get rid of in the tornado. And that from that place of empowerment, you then feel a sense of being in charge of your life as opposed to life carrying you away. Now, there's that center place, which is, as I described, still being a part of life as opposed to stepping outside the tornado. And I think what happens to a lot of people is if life becomes too much of a tumult, if they're getting tossed around and beat up too much inside the tornado, instead of realizing that there's a center that you can come back to, they often step outside the tornado. And in a lot of ways, that shows up in different forms of depression, like a lot of young people are suffering from what they call depersonalization, where they no longer have any feeling in their body. There's no longer any emotion. There's no longer any passion. They don't know what they want. They don't know what they want to do. They're sick, sad, tired all the time. They get wrapped up in different distractions like video games or drugs. And that is just as dangerous. It's just as damaging a place to be as being in the tornado and getting beat up by all the things in it.
No, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. Do you think a big issue with that is the fact that nobody's actually present? I think a lot of us are so caught up on the past and we're so worried about work or going to school or, you know, what whomever is doing and when they're doing it. I think a lot of people are just ungrounded and not actually present, like you said, in the center of the tornado. Is the best way that you found to go about that, is that the meditation, or perhaps is it getting in the gym and lifting the weights, and is that your meditation?
Well, there are so many different forms of meditation. I think because we live in such a neurotic world, because our nervous systems are so damaged, and they're damaged in such a way, and you know this is true, when you look at all the physical pain that people are dealing with because of the mental, psychological, psycho-emotional challenges that they're going through, the body, your physical body is not separated from your mind, from the brain. We tend to think of the brain as just in our skull. Well, that's one part of the brain. In fact, I like to call it the flower of humanity, of the world, really. I think that the neocortex is the evolution of the earth flowering, moving up out of the roots of the nourishing earth into this amazing technology that God or the universe or the earth was able to create through the human body. But at the same time, just like with any other flower, if it is unrooted, if you yank it up out of its roots, it will die. And many of us have become so detached from our bodies because of identifying too much with the flower, not being identified enough with what's going on inside our body. We don't have trust in our intuition anymore. We don't trust our gut. We don't follow our hearts. And our muscular system becomes almost like a prison that shackles down and causes disbelief in the intelligence of our heart and of our gut, that the experience of true living is not available to us. So a big part of my invitation is to use forms of meditation that not only calm the mind down, the monkey mind, the head brain, the cortex and cerebral cortex, but also brings your body back into accordance with the emotional state of the human being. So the most obvious exercise modalities that allow that to happen are Qigong or yoga. These are ancient forms, thousands and thousands of years old, ancient forms of mind-body meditation that allows the muscular system to soften enough to allow the root system, the autonomic nervous system, which are the roots of our consciousness, to gain nourishment, the nourishment that should be available to the human being, that allows the head brain to truly be all that it can be, instead of it being the enemy to our body. Once that's established, or once you explore that, or different forms of bioenergetics, that's typically what I teach because I found it to be so resourceful to me. Bioenergetics is just a way of reducing the muscular tension in the body through cathartic type exercises. Then you can begin exploring sit down meditation, where you just focus on your breath and you just be mindful of the thoughts coming to your consciousness and watching them float by like a cloud in the sky. So there's body meditation and then there's mind-centered meditation. A combination of the two is what I found to be the most resourceful for this day and age.
So how do you said your combination of the two is the most resourceful. Is that one session you're incorporating mind and a body meditation, or is it just throughout your week, you know, you're gonna meditate mentally, or you're gonna go in and get in the gym and that's gonna be your particular release? Or is it you combine them and do it all at once?
I don't think weight training in the gym is resourceful. And this is gonna sound crazy, especially coming from a guy who's a professional strongman. I teach people how to weight train. Weight training affords you certain challenges energetically that allow you to grow certain virtues, mm-hmm. discipline, commitment, things of that nature, courage, overcoming obstacles. But at the same time, I don't believe that it softens your viscera. It doesn't open up your autonomic nervous system, your peripheral nervous system, really, all the nerves that are in your body, the nerve vortexes in your body from your neck down. It causes actually more restriction, I've found. I think that's a part of the reason why our ancestors did forms of like stretching. They spent a lot of time stretching the muscular system and focusing on breathing more so than the building up of muscular tissue. But I also see it as a form of character building, and I find it to be resourceful if balanced with stretching and breathing type exercises. So there has to be a balance there. If you look at it this way, here's another way to describe it or to categorize the two different types of exercises and what they afford you. Weight training, different forms of high intensity interval training, even sprinting, are very yang. Yang is very male, meaning that it's very aggressive. And if you study the autonomic nervous system, has two branches to it. It's got your sympathetic and your parasympathetic branch. The sympathetic branch of your nervous system is associated with yangness, maleness, aggression, the corticoid hormones, like your adrenal hormones, adrenaline. Things right. of that nature. They get you going, but they also can burn you out. Weight training, sprinting, high intensity stuff is very yang in nature, which is fine. It's good. We need that. We need that type of stimulation in order for us to experience the other side of the coin, which is yin, which is soft, which is growing, which is anabolic. The first side I described is male, is catabolic. The second side is more anabolic. There are exercise modalities that stimulate the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system, which in turn allow your body to become more anabolic. And those are exercises that I don't think we pay enough attention to, that we need to engage in more. And that is deep breathing, meditation, bioenergetics, yoga, qigong, walking. Is very parasympathetic stimulating, and in that yin type activity, we also find the calming effect that allows us to step out from the tumult of the tornado and into the eye, into the center of it. Does that all make sense?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. So you personally, how often do you engage in the yin activities? Or is it just as you see, oh, wow, okay, I'm getting a little bit ungrounded, it's time to yin out?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Here's the thing. It's building the discipline of creating a habit of consistently engaging in yin activities is the best way to do it. I could sit here and talk till I'm blue in the face and it all smells like bullshit because I have a difficult time doing that. I'm way too high strung to be consistent with one form of meditation. So like, you know, someone who has to use medication, I come back from time to time to meditation. And if I find myself getting too ungrounded, or if I find myself spinning too quickly out of orbit, I always begin with stretching and relaxing my muscles and deep breathing exercises. I might engage in that for 3, 4, 5 weeks. Or if I feel it necessary, I will listen to Holosync CDs, which are my favorite forms of actual sit-down meditation. Holosync are CDs. It's an audio program you listen to, and it kind of takes you through a form of guided meditation, if you will.
Okay.
I've been using that for over 10 years. That's always been helpful to me. And one habit that I've kept consistent for the past 3 years or so is walking. If I ever feel like I'm getting out of orbit, ungrounded, I make sure that I'm walking, and it's probably the one that has kept me in orbit the longest. It's just getting up in the morning and going for a walk for an hour.
Very interesting, man. I tell you the truth, that's literally how I start every single day, is with maybe a 30 to a 1 hour long walk. When I don't walk, the entire day goes to shit. You know, my productivity's down. I start getting clouded thoughts. I might skip lunch. It literally is the greatest way I found to start my days. Go for a walk, come home, do breakfast. Everything else just seems to flow. That's really cool that you mentioned that. As far as like the whole bioenergetics thing, I tell you the truth, man, you're actually who introduced that to me. And it's been very significant. I still have a lot to learn about it, and I'm still, you know, identifying, you know, quote unquote, neurotic holding patterns, as you like to call it. How's that kind of helped you? What led you to discover the bioenergetics, and why has it been so effective for you?
I was going through a difficult time when my first daughter was born. We were living in New York in my father-in-law's basement, and I must have been about 24 years old, maybe 25, and my life wasn't going where I wanted it to go. So I decided to take a class in what's called dynamic meditation, which is created by a man named Osho, who's no longer alive, but he's got plenty of books available, and he's quite the interesting character. Definitely. And Osho created a form of meditation that was physical in nature, and there are different stages of this type of meditation, but a lot of it is cathartic in nature. So there's a particular period during this 1 hour meditation where you let out whatever's coming up in your body. You scream, you hit, you cry, you shake, you rock, whatever you become sensitive to what your body wants you to do, and you just go with it. And it's a powerful place to come from, because it's almost like you are becoming aware of and sensitive to what your body is telling you. And like I said before, we become so unrooted from our bodies. Right. So I found great pleasure in that, and I found great release in that, and it was helping me to a great degree. But I wanted to take it one step further, and the lady that put on the class also had one-on-one coaching sessions. So I decided to take a one-on-one coaching session with this lady. And when I got into the office with her, it was one of the most enlightening experiences in my life, and has led me down the path to where I am today when it comes to exploring the different mind-body modalities for freedom. She put me into a very stressful physical position. It's called the bow, and I've taught it in many other videos, but it's called the bow. It's a very stressful position, and it causes you to sort of become anxious because of the amount of stretch that you're placing on tight, rigid muscles, while also opening your mouth as wide as you can and then breathing in that way. It's very awkward and uncomfortable. She had me do this for a few minutes, and I, at that point, if you've done it correctly for the first time, you're going to feel very charged up. Your whole body feels like it's buzzing with electricity. And she brought me over to a bed, and I guess through her assessment, she realized that I was very tight in my hips. And she asked me to start humping the mattress. I know this sounds crazy, and I thought it was crazy at the time too, but I trusted this lady and I want to see what would happen. So she's in her beautiful British accent said, tells me to start fucking the mattress. She goes, just fuck it, just ram it, jam that mattress. And she's like, harder, harder, harder. And I'm doing it. And of course, what comes up is laughter. So I'm giggling because it's silly, but then it's almost like a floodgate of laughter just broke open, And for the first time in probably a decade, I had the experience of deep belly laughter to the point where you're crying. I don't know if you remember when you were a kid or if you ever had this happen recently, but it's a very rare experience for most adults to laugh like you did when you were a kid, to the point where you can't eat, it hurts, you're laughing so much. I must have laughed for 5 minutes straight, all the while apologizing to her about laughing. I'm like, I'm sorry, I know, like, I want to continue with the therapy, but I just can't stop laughing. It's almost like I was hypnotized by the laughter, and it felt good. I didn't want to continue it because I wanted to talk to her about what was going on, but I had to let it was a floodgate. The floodgates opened, and this torrent just came through. And after about 5 minutes or so, I finally caught my breath. You know, I still had like the remnants of giggling going on, and I say to her, I forget her name. I think it was Laura Locke. I say to her, What the hell was that? What's going on? Why am I laughing like that? I'm sorry, but like, this just happened. And apparently she, in her maturity with this form of therapy, understood what was going on, and she said, it's okay. That's exactly what's supposed to happen. In fact, we just released you from a lot of pent-up old experiences that you may have had when you were a child associated with naughtiness in experiencing your sexuality. And this is essentially the way she said it. She said, at some point someone told you that it was naughty to have good feelings. And I was like, well, I don't necessarily remember that, but according to the type of the philosophy of this type of therapy, the body remembers. The peripheral nervous system is where our unconscious lies. And our unconscious doesn't forget. The cells of our body don't forget our experiences, even though our conscious mind does. And my body remembered, and it was trapped in the organs and the muscular tissue surrounding my hips, that I had uncomfortable feelings about my sexuality. And she also described that particular area of sexuality around the hips as being linked to the emotions and feelings of joy and pleasure. And she said that's why laughter was available to you when you began stimulating the musculature in that area. And that opened up my mind to, you know, it's not like I went to college and read about this shit in books. That I had that experience. And at that moment, I said to myself, oh my God, this is the key to freedom. And I need to know more about this. I need to learn more about this for myself. And I need to share this with people. I need to tell people that this is available to them, that your muscular system is holding you prison and holding back joyful feelings, good feelings, pleasure in life, and that it could be released through different forms of exercise that are similar to what I experienced there. It led me to studying Wilhelm Reich, who was a student of Freud. Wilhelm Reich discovered that his patients wouldn't really necessarily heal through talk therapy. He would talk and he'd psychoanalyze them, but he noticed that it really wasn't helping. And he also recognized that their bodies often took on a particular character structure that was associated with the pains that they were experiencing. And he noticed that the muscular system was rigid in particular areas associated with different trapped emotions. This lady that I did the therapy with noticed just by looking at my hips that I had restricted sexual feelings, and that's one way of looking. That's one example of it. But people with really tight shoulders, people with really tight jaws, people with really tight chests, bellies, they all represent different trapped emotions that weren't allowed to be expressed at some point in their lives, and that if allowed to and provoked in the proper way, they'll become free enough. The muscular system will fully allow those emotions to come out. And when that happens, you're more available to the experiences of life. And that led me to studying the work of Wilhelm Reich, then subsequently Alexander Lowen. And through Lowen, I discovered that one of his best students, in fact, the man that helped him write his biography, lived in Florida, only a few miles away from me, and I've been working with Bob Glaser for the past 3 years, and I'm going through a very extensive course of learning to be able to support people not only with these ideas, but through actual exercises with them to bring freedom to the body and mind.
That's beautiful, man. Absolutely. And touching on the laughter, you know, I'm huge on laughter. And when I moved to England with my buddy, when we were healing him, that was one of the things that we emphasized the most. I found that it rejuvenates and heals us physically and emotionally. And for me personally, it always leads to greater motivation to make healthier, more productive choices. As far as these restrictions that you were learning about and realized that you had, is this something that you've become aware of and you're avoiding? Not necessarily avoiding, but you're just more aware of your each individual moment as to not build up those restrictions again. Is this something that you need to go in there and do all the time? Like, do you need to go hump the bed tomorrow to kind of loosen up the hips again? Like, how often do you go about that?
It's constant maintenance. You know, the very first thing that I would invite people to do if they're interested in these ideas is to find a professional that understands this. It's an obscure form of psychoanalysis, and if you Google or look for different forms, and there's so many different schisms. I mean, it shows up in many different. I call it bioenergetics simply because I fell in love with the work of Lowen. But I'm also reading the work of a man named Peter Levine. He's a contemporary, and he calls it trauma release therapy. And somatic experiencing is another one. He's somatic experiencing. And then there are so many different forms, but they all fall under the umbrella term of neo-Reikian therapy. Reikian as in Reich, R-E-I-C-H. Okay. So look for a professional that can help guide you through this. I couldn't have done this on my own. Although I make videos and I talk this way to share these ideas with people, it's more to open them up to realizing that this is available to them. But it's very difficult to do it on your own if you're not guided by a loving coach or practitioner. And so I'd invite you to look for that. But even still, I've experienced it. This has been my experience, that when you go in the beginning and you work with your coach and they help open up these locked areas and help bring attention to these locked areas in your character, that it's always going to be something you have to maintain. If I'm not mindful, or like I said before, if I get caught too caught up in the tumult of life, in the tornado, I quickly lose what was gained in the way of muscular softening and deep breathing from the bioenergetic exercises, and I have to come back and do it all over again. Now, as you release certain trapped baggage, you evolve. I've evolved more in the past 3 years than I probably evolved since I was probably a teenager. And I attribute so much of it to meditation and bioenergetics. But at the same time, each level of evolution that you reach, there's still remnants of baggage that you'll carry. And then there are new challenges that you'll have to approach from a totally different standpoint in order to get past. Early on in my therapy, it was a lot centered around my belly and hips. As I've released and worked to maintain the softness in my belly and hips, which is still something I have to maintain. I have to do it. I have to do massage. I have to massage my belly. I have to deep breathe. I have to use a stool to stretch these particular areas. I have to use the bow. I use the bow every single day to keep my belly soft, to keep my pelvis soft. But as the issues that were resolved around that particular part of my character, now when I say character, it includes mind and body, I found that there was tension in my heart, across my heart. Now there's a whole set of different experiences and emotions and muscular tension associated with opening your heart now. And then it might move to right now, and that was, when I say the heart, that was probably late last year, mostly about mid last year. Right now, what I'm experiencing is restriction in my legs. So it's moving around. Now I'm having to focus a lot on stretching my legs. Where I used to spend a lot of time squatting and deadlifting lots of weight to build up my legs, I've come to realize that it's causing me more neurosis than anything. So now I actually spend more time doing yoga and stretching my legs and getting massage on my legs and doing bioenergetic exercises that bring freedom to my legs. I don't think this is something that's ever going to stop. Once you engage in this form of personal development, it just goes from level to level to level. Even Lowen, Bob Glaser spent 30 years, I think, working with Lowen, who is the founder of bioenergetics. He says that Lowen was 90 years old. He was a little over 90 years old when he died, and he admitted that he still felt neurotic in certain parts of his body. And at 90 years old, he would throw temper tantrums on his bed. He would do the bow, and he would, he'd hit punching bags, and he'd do bioenergetics well into his old age. So it's just like eating food. You've got to nourish your energetic strength the same way you nourish your physiology with food. It's constant practice of meditation and mind-body centering.
You know, in my opinion, I feel like unlocking people's fears or threats, if you will, is one of the most important factors in becoming that strongest, healthiest version of ourselves. And it seems like you need to unlock those threats in order to move forward life. And like you said, to constantly take on all the new challenges that are inevitably going to continue to show up. Is that something you've come to acknowledge, that, you know, you need to embrace fears that perhaps you didn't even see as fears? And I don't really like to use the word fear. I prefer to use the word threat.
They're always there. They just show up differently. And what I'm discovering as I evolve is that most of them are not in the world. They're not out there. The real threats are not out there. The real threats are in here.
Absolutely.
And it's a matter of getting over the unresourceful stories we've told ourselves and freeing our body and our cells from the traumatic experiences that we've had in our formative years. And when I say trauma, it doesn't mean that you were molested or physically beaten to any great degree, but they're experiences that we had to defend ourselves against that we might not even remember, but they're trapped in our bodies and they show up in the choices that we make in life.
No, absolutely, man. I 100% agree with you. That's a really good point. Going back a little bit though, like you said, you were one generation in America and your family always ate whole, unprocessed, real foods. And part of getting healthy for me and clearing my mind and getting rid of illness, and the same thing with my buddy, was the food. The food was a huge, huge thing. And once we got the clarity in our diets, the clarity in our mind, body, and spirit seemed to just come out of nowhere. And it really, really helped with everything. Do you do pre-workout, post-workout meals? Are you a snack type of guy? Like what type of food? I know you eat really good, healthy food, but what would an example of your daily meals be? Because I'm sure it ties into being the strongest, healthiest version of yourself.
This is what I'm experiencing now. I'm discovering that lighter, simpler foods are what allow me to really express myself the best way, to become the strongest version of myself. In other words, I'm finding that food weighs me down, and the richer the food is, the more convoluted the food is, the more that I don't know how else to say it, but the more rich the food is, the more it interferes with my motility, you know, the way I can express myself physically and psychologically. And that I do best on a diet that's low in calories. And when I say that, I mean I try to fast once or twice a week. And I truly feel the best when I take I use a greens drink called Living Fuel. I've been using it for many years. If I have a Living Fuel, I take my cod liver oil every day and then eat. Really, I hate to say it because I don't want to build any ideas around fad diets. I'm just telling you what my intuition has been guiding me towards and what's working for me. And that is generally a lower fat diet, moderate protein, and lots of vegetables. And I've subscribed to many different diet ideas because they sounded good and because they made logical sense to me. But all I can do is is share with you what my intuition is guiding me towards right now and how I feel best. And it is when I engage in diets that are low to moderate fat, moderate protein, and higher in vegetable content and the greens drink that I drink.
Excellent, man. Would you consider that greens drink a supplement?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what other supplements do you take, or is that the only one?
That's it. I take Living Fuel, and I also use, this might sound like a commercial for Living Fuel, but I love the company, and they're actually sponsoring one of my events because I talk about them so much, even though I'm not I don't sell this stuff. It's just a great supplement.
Yeah.
Living Fuel, and I use their Super Essential Omega fatty acid supplements, and I take that every day as well. So those are the only two supplements I take. There are times when I'll take protein supplements or branched chain amino acids or things like that, but those are occasional depending on, you know, what kind of goal I'm trying to reach or if I'm experimenting. But the staples really are the greens drink and the omega fatty acids.
Okay, thanks for that. I appreciate that. I'll definitely have to check it out, man. Pretty much already covered them, but if you had to say you had three set-in-stone nutrition principles, I know you're big on the vegetables, you just explained me. What would those three nutrition principles be?
Wow. Well, the very first thing is I think the majority of us, many of us, are dehydrated. And I would say do whatever you can to get your hands on the cleanest, healthiest water that you can possibly get. Our water is pretty polluted. First, let's be grateful for the fact that we freaking have water, because there are people on Earth that don't even have access to clear water, much less unpolluted water.
Absolutely.
So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for what civilization has afforded us in the way of quote-unquote clean water. But the same way that we're afforded clean water, we also have polluted water. And when I say it's polluted, it's because there's a lot of chemicals. These are agricultural chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and even to some degree, a lot of people believe that we're being purposefully poisoned with certain minerals and chemicals in our water. You know, I don't want to get too much into that. It's neither here nor there. What I would rather you have, instead of spending your time worrying about what's actually in your water, is to just focus your energy on getting the cleanest water you possibly can. There are different forms of filtration. I use reverse osmosis water. I have one in my gym and I have one in my home. Look, just make your efforts towards it. As many different people as you talk to, you're going to get as many different opinions about it. Do your research and do the best that you can. I really believe and I often say that there's transformative power in your intention alone. Even if it so happens that the filtration system that you're using isn't the best one,
right,
on paper, at least you're making an effort towards it. And I really believe that intention to do right, in many ways, is far more resourceful than actually having it right.
I 100% agree. It's almost like you're focusing on the positive.
Right. So do your best, even if it's a Brita filter that you get from Walmart that, you know, maybe it's not the greatest, but make the effort to get clean, healthy water in your body. We're made up of water. We're something like 70, 80, 90% water. I mean, we come out of the water. You know, you don't have to believe in evolution to look at what science has made very clear, is that if you study the mineral composition of seawater and the mineral composition of our blood, the water, the interstitial water in our bodies, it's no wonder that it's exactly the same. We are seawater. We came up out of the sea. I don't care how you want to say it. We're a part of. We come from the earth.
Right.
And water is what allowed organic life to take form on Earth. It all began in the water, and its roots are in the water. Our roots are in the water. We've got to do water. So I begin there, and the only other one that I would give, I can't give you three, but I'll give you two. The other one is not a diet per se or a set of parameters, but it's the invitation to become aware and sensitive to what your body is telling you and let go of any diet dogma that you've been fed or have personally identified with. Vegetarianism might be a good idea, But when your teeth are turning brown and your hair is falling out and you've got fungal infections and you haven't taken a shit in 3 days, maybe you want to change the vegetarian diet because it's just not working for you. It doesn't mean it won't work for your neighbor. Maybe your neighbor has big, bright, shiny eyes and strong, healthy teeth and nails and hair, and she's a vegetarian, but that's her. That's not you. Don't attach to the idea, attach to the result. How's that working out for you? Be very honest with yourself. Be very self-objective. I subscribed many years to the ideas that come from the work of a man named Weston A. Price and the studies that he did on indigenous tribes and the types of diet they ate that they ate that was very high in fats and organ meats and butter, and I liked it, and it worked for me when I was 23, and it made a lot of sense. Whatever's happened between 23 and 33 has changed my physiology in such a way that I don't respond as well to that much fat. It's not that I'm against it, or I don't like it, or I found the truth. You know, everybody thinks they found Jesus when they've got this diet that they personally subscribe to. Look, it's nothing like that. It's what is your body telling you? How is that working out for you? Can you detach from your dogma about what you've been doing and try something 180 degrees different to perhaps get something better? And that's my diet advice.
Awesome, man. I mean, realistically, your diet advice sounds very similar to your life advice and your strength advice. It all seems to be kind of tying in together. Identifying new challenges, coming out of that comfort zone, and ultimately making yourself better. That's awesome, man. And I guess that's where the whole holistic... I mean, you definitely have a holistic approach to pretty much all that you're doing. How do you address yourself?
You know, to be honest, I like to call myself a poet.
I like that, man.
I just see this whole thing as poetry. I don't, the respectable labels that we give each other have so many associations with it, none of which I want to be tied to. I don't want you to call me a this or a that. I want it to be as vague as possible so I have room to grow. I have room to say things without someone challenging me. If someone wants to challenge what Elliot Hulse says, and many people do, I have no personal identification with the words that came out of my mouth because I'm just a fucking poet. I'm just saying stuff that I feel like saying. If you like it, great. Hopefully it helps you. If you don't like it, hey, I'm not making any hard and fast claims. If you want to say that I'm an idiot for saying the shit that I said, that's fine. Guess what? I'm just a fool. I'm just a poet.
That in itself is poetry. I appreciate that. That's awesome, man. And being that you're not married to any type of training, I've also heard you mention the lean hybrid muscle. And that's kind of what you just reminded me of. Can you explain to us what the lean hybrid muscle is? And I know you have a program out there. What was special about that program? What kind of makes that a little bit more superior?
When I was competing as a professional strongman, I engaged in all types of unhealthy behaviors to get as big and strong and powerful as I possibly could, and it worked. But it was overkill. It was an imbalanced form of training, and it ultimately led to an injury that caused me to really reflect on who I was becoming and the type of training that I was engaged in. And I essentially gave up the title and the behavior of professional strongman, and still wanted to engage in athletic forms of training, but I had different goals. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to get my body fat down. I wanted to remain strong, but I also wanted to be athletic, so I wanted to be able to move. So I started doing workouts that were hybrid, in essence, that included functional exercise. There were elements of bodybuilding, elements of powerlifting. There are some sprints and body weight exercises. So really, it's a mishmash of training that ultimately allowed me to break free from the restricted exercise program that I had been following for so long to reach the imbalanced goals that I had. And I got great results with it, and I documented it, and I made it available to people through an ebook. It's just a PDF program that you download and can follow the same workouts that I used a few years back when I transformed my body.
That's awesome, man. So what would you say are the main principles of that program? If I'm going to go buy a lean hybrid muscle, I'm going to go check it out. What's the main takeaways?
It's funny because it comes out of, I guess, my philosophy in life to begin with. And it's this idea of creating balance between multiple different stimuluses and modalities. And of course, you know, years later, CrossFit becomes very popular. CrossFit is a very good way to describe what it might be like, except CrossFit also has its imbalance in certain ways. It seems like it's all of everything, but it leans very heavily towards a certain type of athlete and a certain type of body. And with lean hybrid muscle, it does the same thing in that it includes many different exercise modalities, but to be completely honest, it leans more towards the endomorph, mesomorph type body that wants more heavy lifting, wants more bodybuilding, more strength building, as opposed to doing 1,000 sit-ups and 1,000 skipping ropes and 1,000 kipping chin-ups. You see,
right.
So there's going to be a bit more. You're going to find yourself doing a bit more deadlifts, a bit more inclined bench presses, a bit more bodybuilding and powerlifting.
Okay, no, that's cool, man. And you said that the injury was the bicep injury you're referring to, right? And was that injury that was what helped you realize that there's more to strength than basically, like you put it, the physical outward manifestation? Was that injury the catalyst?
It forced me to make some changes. You know, it's one of these situations where you know better, you know, and I think we all know better. We all have an innate sense, either through our experiences or our education, that we know better. We know that what we're doing is wrong, you know, whatever it is. If you're cheating on your wife, it's like, you know better. And it's like, you wait till you get caught to then be like, to repent and then make changes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, I knew better. I've studied long enough and I've had enough experiences that I knew that what I was doing was going to ultimately come to a head. And it did, and it the minute it happened, I had to repent. I had to say, okay, I screwed up. I know better. How am I going to make this right? And it was a turning point in my life.
It almost seems like some of us look for that injury or that, aha, yeah, I already knew it. It seems like we need that in order to kind of like take that next step. Like you said, most of us do know better, but I personally, I want to say procrastinate until something bad happens, but I definitely wait too long, and then I use that as the motivator, the fuel for the fire to kind of take my life and my fitness to the next level. I notice a lot of people tend to do that. Why do you think we tend to do that?
It sounds strange, but I think it's easier to work from that place. I think it's difficult. I've made videos about this before. I think it's difficult to set goals and achieve them for most people, and even for myself. I think what has to happen, and I've done this purposefully in many instances of my life, but you've got to create crisis so that you can't look back. There needs to be a situation. You either self-create a circumstance, or you fall into a circumstance where there's no back door anymore and you have to do it. And when you've got a dog nipping at your ass, it's much easier to run. I mean, you have no choice or you will be torn to shreds. This dog is biting at your shorts. You're going to run, as opposed to someone saying, well, hey, there's a free lunch a mile ahead. Well, you know, I can wait a little bit. You know, I'm hungry, but I'll get there when I get there. Maybe I'll walk, you know, I'll check my iPhone while I'm walking towards the free lunch. And, you know, if I see someone I know, I'll stop and say hello. It's like, you know what, there's the goal there, that free lunch, but you're taking your time and there really is no sense of urgency.
Right.
So by purposefully creating circumstances where there's a dog biting your ass and you have to sprint full speed, you not only get the shit done, but you get it done faster, and it's a very powerful technique to use.
You know, it almost sounds like you're using the yang method, like you said. It's like you're taking advantage of our tendency to want to be the big bad male and utilize that, what is it, the sympathetic nervous system, but you're using it to your advantage in this point. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Create those circumstances. I tell kids a lot of times, they send me videos about, you know, oh, I'm 21 years old and I have no motivation. All I want to do is play video games in my mom's basement. And I tell them, oh, yeah, great. You know what you do? Pick up the video game machine, smash it to the floor, and tell your mom that you're moving out and go live in your car.
Yes.
Well, now you've got a totally different circumstance at hand, because the very thing that was making you lazy is destroyed. And you need to go find food. So guess what? You're going to get off your ass and you're going to do something because you're going to live in your car for the rest of your life. And I guarantee that's uncomfortable enough to make you go get a job.
Right, no doubt. So here's the question then. What is this all leading to? You know, we're all having these realizations and we're taking advantage of these circumstances and we're going to smash the video game machine and I'm going to use that as motivation to go and build myself and be greater and be stronger. And then what? You know, we get there and you grow old and you've accomplished these things and you're constantly trying to seek out new challenges and develop your character to the day you die. And then, I mean, what do you think it was all about and what was it for? To help the next guy?
Joseph Campbell talks about this concept of the hero's journey. And at some point in every man's life, boy generally, because it usually happens between the ages, I think it happens to all of us between the ages of typically 17 and 23, there's this nudge, this nudging feeling that I had better go do something. And oftentimes it's as plain as day, except we're not courageous enough to face it, or the world has told us that it's wrong. And it usually ends up, you know, in the form of something like choosing a career path that really speaks to your heart but might not necessarily be able to pay the bills, obviously pay the bills right away. You know, your parents want you to be a lawyer, but you want to play your acoustic guitar. Well, it's like, well, you can't join a band, son, because you need to go make money. And that was your call to adventure, was, dude, you're supposed to. Your heart, the call to adventure for you is go play the acoustic guitar, and you might have to live in your car and live in Nashville, Tennessee, playing at bars for drunk people for months at a time. But ultimately, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And the call to adventure isn't so much about what you get on the end of the adventure, at the end of the adventure. It's not so much about the goal or the tangible realization, as it is about cultivation. And you're going to be faced with very unique challenges that are specific to your soul's evolution. And the entire purpose of this thing is to seek out and overcome the challenges that are specific to our soul's thirst. Each one of us has a unique thirst, a unique call to adventure that we need to embark upon in order to become the strongest version of ourselves. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a pot of gold at the end of the thing. What it means is that you die with a life worth living, and that you can smile peacefully to yourself on your deathbed and say, I did all that I felt I should have done, and I can lie down peacefully. You might not have a penny to your name, but you will smile in your heart when you go.
Absolutely. You know, man, you are definitely a poet. I 100% agree with you, man. And the thing is, you know, I do feel that we're all interconnected. And I think if you can lay down knowing in your heart at the end of the day, you know, maybe it's your last day on earth, and you're like, wow, I did this. I handled what I needed to handle. That in itself, I think, raises the vibration of the collective consciousness. But I also feel like you are a prime example of this. You know, the more you're letting your own light shine, you're giving thousands and thousands of people. Like you said, you have a million subscribers around the world. The same ability, the unconscious ability to do the exact same thing. You're inspiring people to want to go, let their light shine with the hopes that they're going to give someone else that same ability. That is really cool, man. Like, have you ever sat back and been like, wow?
You know, it's strange. It's really strange to me, especially when I get the emails or I meet people, and the admiration and the gratitude that they express towards me. But I don't feel anything more than that which a bird feels when he sings from the treetop. He's just doing what he's supposed to do. Right. And the passerby might take delight in the sound of that bird, and it might enhance his life because perhaps he was depressed that day and he heard the bird's song and it brought warmth and joy to his heart that allowed him to go home and make a new decision. At the same time, someone might hear the same exact bird and be annoyed by it because it woke him up and he's trying to sleep. The bird is going to do what the bird's going to do. And it doesn't become personally identified with the results that show up in someone else. So a lot of times the people come to me with the gratitude and admiration, and I almost feel silly in receiving it, because I'm like, oh, what's the big deal? I turn on the camera and I can put it as bluntly as this. I just like to bullshit. I turn on the camera and I stand there and I bullshit in front of the camera. And in the same way that the bird just does it because it feels good and it's just like, this is what I'm supposed to do. That's just what I do, man. And I can't get too caught up with the idea that perhaps I'm raising any type of vibration,
yeah,
because that becomes overwhelming in and of itself.
No, I absolutely respect that, man. That's great. That's fantastic. You know, I know we've been on here for at least an hour. Before I let you get out of here, though, what's your number one health tip?
I guess going along the same lines, you know, I probably mentioned Joseph Campbell at least three times in this audio. He said, he has this phrase where he talks about following your bliss. And following your bliss could be likened onto allowing the river of life to carry you, but to carry you in such a way that it's a peaceful journey, one that doesn't afford too much resistance in the way of fighting against the current. And when you get in your canoe and you allow the river to take you where it takes you and have full trust in it and enjoy the ride, you're going to be healthy because you're free from the greatest disease that causes health, and that is stress. Follow your bliss, follow your heart, get in touch with what your gut, your intuition, your heart is telling you to do, your body is inviting you to do, and have faith in it and ride it until the end without regret.
Absolutely, man. No, that's beautiful. I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. And I want to tell you, though, watching your videos, you were actually who introduced me to Reich, and I bought Character Analysis after watching one of your videos, as well as Joseph Campbell. If I'm not mistaken, Joseph Campbell, like you said, he's got the hero's journey, but the hero's journey, is this the same hero's journey that's been associated with pretty much like every Disney movie, every major production film? Is that the same Joseph Campbell?
Joseph Campbell was an inspiration to George Lucas. And, you know, George Lucas was the creator of the Star Wars trilogy.
Yes, okay. So that is the same guy. That's okay. Excellent.
If you want to know what the hero's journey looks like, follow Luke Skywalker. That is it in its most contemporary and beautiful form.
That's awesome, man. That makes sense. And, I mean, we still see that in so many other films and life. It's just a repetitive... It's a universal habit of all of us that we seek out and we're all drawn to. Because, I mean, look at all these movies. They always kill it. They crush it. We're all resonating with that inner hero's journey. It's just a matter of acknowledging it and seeking out your own, I guess.
It's so funny that we live in a culture that romanticizes these ideas on the silver screen. And then when we talk to children, we feed them all types of bullshit. Like, you can be whatever you want to be. Do what you want to do, like all these fantasies. Watch Disney movies, and the world constantly tells you that it's okay to be you, and that you should follow your heart. Listen, like in Star Wars, it's the Force. The Force is with you. Trust the Force, Luke. Let go and allow the Force to carry you. These are ideas we romanticize and we cheer for and we love on the silver screen. And parents, and this is why, you know, I'm referring to talking to children, take their children to see these movies, and they buy the DVDs and they watch the movies with their children. And then when their children want to go out into the world and do exactly what they've learned to be the right thing to do through all of these media outlets, they say, no, it's way too dangerous. No, don't do it. No, it's not the right thing to do. Oh, be careful out there. Oh, make sure you have insurance. Luke Skywalker didn't have any motherfucking insurance when he was riding his spaceship into the middle of the Empire's giant machine. He's doing what he's doing. He's following the Force and being all that's available to every single man. Do that shit. Go do something dangerous. Go be Luke Skywalker and forget about safety and security for a moment and relish in the experience of the call to adventure.
You're right. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Take it all in. Be present and just live. Do it. Silence everything else. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. Ultimately, those thoughts are existing solely in that person's head any damn way. Do what you got to do. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. I really appreciate your time, Elliot. It's been an absolute pleasure, bro. I hope to link up with you sometime in the near future, man.
Yeah, that was a great interview. I had Cuban coffee before we started. I think I should have that every time before I do an interview.